Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. After several years of gridlock and almost 5 months into the current fiscal year, North Carolina has a new state budget. Governor Roy Cooper's decision to sign the latest proposal from Republican lawmakers, a bill in which he said the good outweighs the bad, removed the final roadblock. Unfortunately, despite Cooper's tepid blessing and the fact that it does include some important and overdue items, the budget comes up short in several important areas. Of course, for Democratic members of the legislature who were largely excluded from the budget writing process, this situation left them with some difficult choices to make. And recently I sat down with one of those lawmakers, State Representative Ashton Wheeler Clemens of Guilford County.
Well, Representative Ashton Wheeler Clemens, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be with you today.
Did you ever think you'd be in session up to Thanksgiving, having started at the beginning of the year?
Definitely not. In our first term last year, we got out November 18th, and everyone thought that was like the longest ever, couldn't believe, and here we are again. So when you run for office, you have this vision that it's a part-time job, but really it is all year. So we're back for Thanksgiving. Hopefully we won't be there for the Christmas holidays, but we'll see.
On behalf of all North Carolinians, we share that wish. Obviously, the big issue that's been going on this past week, as we record this, actually, the day of the vote in the State House of Representatives, is the budget bill that finally there seems to be an agreement. There's a lot of concerns still that have been expressed about what's in that budget agreement. Governor Cooper said that the good outweighs the bad. What's your perspective on this budget, and is it worth doing, or do you still have deep concerns about it?
So I think the answer for me is going to be both. You know, I think, you know, I'm in school. I'm in a school right now. I'm in schools every day. And so I see across our state the needs that people feel. I see teachers and how they're working and struggling, families, how they're working and struggling. And so I really think that our state needs a budget. Is this the budget that Governor Cooper would have written, or that I would have written, or our caucus, were we in power, would have written? No, we don't think it goes far enough in many, many areas. I don't think it goes far enough in education. It doesn't in protecting our environment. There are still some provisions that really give me heartburn. But as a legislator in the minority party, when we haven't been part of those conversations, and we get the budget, you know, Monday night at 5 o'clock, we have a decision to make. Yes or no, is this more steps in the right direction than not? And I think each of us is trying to weigh that on our heart. And that's hard to do when you see 5% increases, which is not nothing for our educators, but it's also not what they deserve in the crisis environment that they're in. There's a particular provision that leaves out Guilford County, which I represent, from a fund for supplemental funding for teachers. And so, you know, there are things that are true heartburn, but I think like all of us, I'll be trying to figure out, is it more steps in the right direction or not? I will say I'm particularly proud of a few concrete things that I've been advocating for our county, including doctoral funding for North Carolina A&T, which they have been due for years and have not gotten. And that is included in this budget. Some funding for Ready for School, Ready for Life, which is a really innovative early childhood program we have in here in Guilford County. And I filed that bill. It's included. I filed the bill for the GTCC aviation training program, and that's included. So for our county, I do think there's lots of positive steps forward. But I will continue to be working to have a budget that the people of North Carolina truly deserve. And I don't think we're there with this budget.
You're obviously a professional educator, been in that realm for a long time. One of the key issues, and you briefly alluded to it, of course, is education funding. And we've recently had a court order in the longstanding Leandro litigation, which directed the General Assembly. The judge actually ordered the General Assembly to embark upon a plan to adequately, for the first time really ever, to fund our schools in a constitutional way. Doesn't appear that this budget takes that step. You have any thoughts on that development and where we go from here?
I mean, I think you summarized where we are correctly. We have a court order. We have expert-based nonpartisan group to tell us what it costs to fund equitable education across our state. We have a court order to do that. And this budget doesn't do that. So, you know, that's where we are. And I don't know enough. None of us know how the constitutional crisis that we're going to be in will play out. But I do know that we as legislators don't get to choose which part of the Constitution we want to follow. And it is clear that a sound basic education for every single child in North Carolina is a requirement in our Constitution. We are not living up to that. We haven't in decades, and we know how to, and we have the resources to. So I don't know how it will play out. We know the current budget doesn't get where we need to be, and I will be lifting my voice loudly that we must continue to take these steps, and we can, and we must continue to take these steps for our students and our educators across our state. So we will see. I guess it's to be determined what's going to happen, but I will continue to be a strong advocate that we can and should be funding the full plan to give a sound basic education to each of our children. And that is not an option. It's in our Constitution. Like, it's not something we can just choose or not choose to do.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. It's one of those, I guess, many instances we've had over the last few years in which the Republican leadership of the General Assembly has taken an action. The courts have said, not so fast. And it's put Democratic members like yourself in the position of saying basically, yeah, the courts are right. They should be telling the legislature that they're acting in an unconstitutional way.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it also shows us the importance of strong three branches of government. And I see things that concern me at the state level trying to erode the strength of our independent three branches of government. But, you know, we are not supposed to operate where one part of government decides everything, especially the legislature, right? So we are supposed to have an executive power and a judicial branch and a legislative branch. It's painful and slow sometimes, but that's how our process is set up to work. And this is an example of why that matters, because we don't get just one part of the government system to make all the decisions in our state. That's not how we're set up for. I think that that's an underlying concern that many of us have, is vision of those three branches of government, trying to lessen powers of the executive branch, lessen powers, make partisan judiciaries, things like that. And to me, this is exactly an example on why we have to hold true to having three branches of government that are do provide the checks and balances that our state, the people that set up our state, intended it to be.
Sounds like at some point, perhaps some of our legislative leaders might need a review of some of the basic civics courses that maybe are taught in some of the schools you've been involved with. Another area that's obviously of great concern, another element that's missing from this budget is, of course, Medicaid expansion. I assume that's another concern that you have. We continue in North Carolina to forgo billions of dollars in federal money that could be creating thousands of jobs and literally saving thousands of lives by our refusal to expand Medicaid. But it appears that once again, we will decline to do that. Do you have any hope that there's any kind of breakthrough on this issue anywhere on the horizon?
It is incredibly disappointing and frustrating, I know, for people across our state. The economic and health and moral reasons are so overwhelmingly compelling for us to do this, and yet so the current leadership chooses to not do it. It blows my mind every day. So I do have hope, however, because I think the Democrats in D.C. have made clear this is happening one way or another. Now, I hope that the state leadership, who has said that they will look at this in the spring, I hope that that's what happens, because the North Carolina solution will come from North Carolina leadership. That is what should happen. And I am glad that Democrats in DC are not willing to continue to just let people die in states like ours that refuse to make this common sense step. So I hope that move at the national level will remind the North Carolina leadership that we are better prepared to make those decisions and should. But if not, we have to save people. There are people dying because we do not make this change every single day. And we just cannot continue to let that be. So I am hopeful that we will see some progress one way or another. And I am most hopeful that that progress is led by North Carolina leadership, compromising and working together in our legislature and with our executive. executive branch. I am going to remain optimistic, but I will say that's my nature. So I don't think you can stay in education for a long time and not keep some optimism. So I am going to stay optimistic.
We're talking with Representative Ashton Wheeler Clemens of Guilford County, who's also, in addition to being a state lawmaker, a former teacher, former assistant superintendent of the Thomasville City Schools. Representative Clemens, you're also the mother, I believe, of three young children. Can you talk to us about where we are with schools in the pandemic and vaccinations and how that's looking from your perspective?
Yes, I have a 10-year-old daughter and who's in fifth grade and twin boys who are seven in first grade. And so we have been living this. My fifth grade daughter, the last year she had a normal school year was second grade. That's really heartbreaking. I am in schools, but schools aren't yet what we want them to be. Schools should be places where kids are interacting and hugging their teachers, and we aren't there yet. So we still have work to do. I am enthused that we are able to have people who choose their children to be vaccinated. My kids went yesterday. I gave one of them a hug getting out of the car this morning. My arm is sore. You know, they're playing drama of it, but my own children were vaccinated yesterday. And I see lots of friends, the relief of being able to have their own children vaccinated. So I hope that we are not far away from getting schools back to how they are meant to be, where people can see smiles and not be masks and interact with each other. But the reality is there are long-term implications for what has happened to schools in the past several years. You know, for our second graders, if their family was virtual for 2 years, this is their first year that they're in the building. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of gaps that have been created, even though I think parents and families were surviving and teachers were doing the best they can, but there is no substitute for in-face, in-class education. And so the needs that were already in our state that are so well documented through the Leandro court cases and other ways are just greater now than they've ever been. I see myself, the social emotional needs that our kids have are greater than they have been. And the stress that the world feels is playing out with our children. And so we have made progress. I'm glad students are in school. They're not in school the way we need them to be. So we need to continue to work hard with vaccinations and other strategies so that we can get schools back to how they are meant to be. But we also need to be real about the current situation of our students and what we're going to need to do. Because if we do not catch these kids up with their unfinished learning that they've had, that is individual issues for children, but that's an economic issue for our state moving forward. I mean, you think about graduation rates and all of those big things that have been impacted that directly link to the future economic growth of our state. So it really is going to be an area where we're going to need to continue to learn, understand, and address gaps if we want to continue to see success moving forward.
Representative Ashton Wheeler Clemens represents Guilford County in the North Carolina House of Representatives. Representative Wheeler Clemens, thank you so much for your service, for your candor, your optimism, and we really appreciate your service, and we'll look forward to catching up in the new year.
Thank you so much for asking my thoughts. It's a pivotal time, so thanks for having me today.
Coming up next, we'll hear from one of the state's top experts in education law about a looming showdown between the judiciary and the legislature over how North Carolina funds its public schools. Don't go away.